Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me today, we've got Aaron O'Brien.
Hello.
And we have special guest with us, Captain Stuart Foley of Trek Yards. Welcome.
Hey, guys. How's it going? It's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah. It's
awesome
always,
to have you.
Always great to have you on. It's like our discovery tradition. We usually have you on like at least once, and then like you and Samuel both with a recap. So it's like a lot of fun to have you guys on to talk about Discovery.
Absolutely.
Unfortunately, Holly's been abducted by the Red Angel again. She's getting all this private time. All this private time.
Yeah.
I guess it's because she doesn't say all the dick jokes like I do.
Well, she accrued some personal time.
Oh.
And where she goes on the personal time is her business.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's why it's so simple, Mr. Tyler.
It's personal. Yes.
It's personal. That's why I don't tell you about it. Dave, you brought up that last week we missed the beat there where Star Trek Discovery got renewed for season 3.
Yes, that's great news. I'm kind of hoping that like this season ends on a cliffhanger and they don't resolve everything so they can resolve it next time, because I would like, I don't know, it just feels like we're over the halfway point in the season, and like I've totally forgotten that like the Red Angel, like what they said in the first episode, that like could this be a series of bad things, and now all of a sudden like the world's at stake. And so I kind of hope, like, they're still trying to find the Red Angel, and then the next season is, like, the resolution. That's what I'm kind of hoping for.
Many worlds are at stake.
Yes. Yeah. All sentient life in the galaxy is kind of all at stake from what they've said, so. And I hope they wrap it up this season, to be fair. I don't want a massive cliffhanger like that for still the next season.
Yeah, I kind of hope they wrap this up, too. I mean, it's been a fun ride, but I don't want to, like, you know, wear out the welcome.
But, like, we've just gotten to the point where now all of a sudden there's a catastrophe about to happen. It feels like they spent so long looking for the catastrophe. It just feels that they're going to wrap up the catastrophe in less time than it took to uncover it.
Yeah, I mean, they have been going for a while, and you kind of think they get more clues, but maybe all these clues add up in the end.
Maybe.
But, Stuart, what is your takeaways currently for second season of Discovery? How have you been feeling about it?
As I've said on our live reviews that we're doing, we really think that they're starting to find their legs, especially this last episode, which is entitled If Memory Serves. As I put it, I think Discovery's finally found its legs. And you know what? They're a pretty sexy set of legs.
Yeah, I agree. I've been enjoying it quite a bit. And I liked a lot of season one, but I thought it had problems. But this has been like, I think they're hitting on all cylinders now.
Yeah, absolutely. We had a lot of issues with season one. A lot of people did. And the haters have kind of quieted down a little bit now. Like, you don't see as much hubbub about the episodes anymore. There's still a few that are very vocal, but in general, it's quieted down quite a bit because it's kind of like they've run out of fodder, if you will, because it's getting good.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But I think the haters either don't watch it or they hate watch it. So
yeah,
not sure why you do hate watching, but.
Well, at least they watch it. I hate people that don't watch something and criticize it when they're uneducated about it. At least they watch it and you know, take the time out of their day to watch it so they can be informed in their ignorance.
And be miserable the whole time.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
I think Aaron and I both have been enjoying the season a lot more than season one, although I do feel like the season two is meandering a bit. I mean, it's still better than season one for sure, but it's still meandering a little bit too much for my liking. It's not as focused as it could be for being such a short season. I mean, last season, they're both kind of short.
Yeah, I find that this season is a lot more episodic feeling, which is nice, is what I like out of Star Trek, that episodic, everything's wrapped up in a bow for each episode, except for it's bookend by this Red Angel and Spock story. And I think they're doing a really fantastic job with that instead of focusing just on that. So I really am enjoying the flow for season two.
Yeah. What would you think? What do you think of Ethan Peck as Spock?
I really like him. He's a better Spock than Quinto.
Wow. That's big words there, sir.
I don't know.
What gives you that? I mean, what makes you that takeaway?
Quinto, I always found to be kind of a caricature of Spock, kind of like a cartoon version, if you will. And plus, he's always so emotional in those movies.
Yes.
The Spock we've seen here has been quiet, subdued, and then once he got his mojo back, if you will, he's very stoic and very, I don't know, he's a lot, we haven't seen a lot of him, mind you, but he's doing way better than I anticipated from just seeing the character. Now having heard him talk, and I think he's really kind of nailed it, and I want to see more of this Spock personally.
Yeah, I'm actually, I think me and Dave been on record now that we want to see a Pike Spock series now.
Oh absolutely.
That's kind of the general consensus, and even Samuel and myself have suggested, if not a series, a mini series. Just yes. Like a 6-episode, you know, something really fantastic. I would be down for it. And since we know they have built the Bridge of the Enterprise for some time in this season, so they have the set for the Enterprise. So who knows what could come of that. But yeah, that's the general consensus, that they need Anson Mount back as Pike for his own series. And I'm kind of on board with that.
I would love this, because one of the things we talked about last week in the news section sort of was like, it almost seems like CBS is, where'd the money go with all some of the things. So like, you know, Discovery's kind of like their take on Axanar with the Klingon War, at least in season one. And then season two, they're kind of like, there was a Captain Pike Kickstarter that people wanted to do a Captain Pike focus show. Now season two is like Captain Pike. So it seems like Discovery is kind of going through some of the fan film ideas and like doing them it themselves, which is
as long as they don't do Renegades.
Oh, I mean, but the thing is that the way they described the Picard show, Stuart, did you guys look over those character things? It sounds a lot like Renegades to me personally.
It does. You're right. Yeah. It does.
So they are making Renegades.
Yeah, that's kind of my fear as well. They need to do something new, and it needs to tie in with TNG. They need to kind of squash the Discovery haters in that way. Don't have it linked to Discovery, like, visually or anything. Have the natural continuation of TNG. But the thing that scares me is Patrick Stewart has said you're going to see, you know, it's a lot different. And now that could mean multiple things, but I'm kind of taking it, since Alex Kurtzman is standing behind him when he's saying it, it's kind of like, oh, man, I don't know what to think.
Cool. Yeah, are you nervous about Kurtzman?
Yes. I think this last episode kind of showed that, because this was one of the first episodes where he was like, you know, the most in charge kind of thing. And it was lens flary to the max.
Oh my God. I was like losing my mind with the lens flares.
And the fisheye lenses.
Yeah.
Now, Samuel and myself have speculated that because it was a Talosian episode talking about, you know, and plus the whole Alice in Wonderland tie-in.
Yeah.
This episode was meant to look that way, as kind of a distorted whatever.
Yeah.
So I really don't have a problem with that. But if it's just confined to this episode, if that kind of style carries over to the next couple, I'll be very disappointed.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows? You know, it's tricky with these passing of the torch, or like involuntary passing of the torch that keeps happening in Discovery. I'm hoping for season three to be an uninterrupted pre-production cycle without any major toss-ups. For the love of God, please no toss-ups. Well,
they've been playing catch-up, and they've been correcting a lot of course corrections going on, because it started with Brian Fuller's vision, and then he got that whole crew got canned, and then they had to do a course correction, add a couple episodes on to the end of the season, wrap up all the crap that he had initiated, except the visual stuff, like no cylindrical nacelles and stupid stuff like that, which is his directive, which can be changed now, thank goodness. But
thank the maker.
And then, of course, Gretchen Berg and
Aaron the other person.
Yeah, they got let go at the beginning of this season. So the first couple episodes are their vision, and then it kind of it's getting shifted again. It's just like, guys, this is the ongoing trend with movies. They change directors midway through after refilm scenes, shuffle things around, nothing makes any sense. It's just like, it's this new Hollywood mentality, and it's really, really hurting their products.
This jarring. It's not great. Hopefully, like I said, season three, please just one smooth pre-production for the love of God.
Yes.
And all that is holy in the world. Just don't mess with the pre-production. Let them finish before you do anything crazy. Like if it's between seasons, that's fine, because that naturally happens a lot of times in shows anyway. But in the middle of seasons, no bueno.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Shall we get started?
Agreed. Yeah, let's get started with the episode. So we have this episode is Star Trek Discovery called If Memory Serves. This is season 2, episode 8, and this aired March 7th, 2019. And we start aboard the Section 31 ship. Stuart, just real quick, the NCOIA 93, are they going to name that, or is that just like...
Oh, the Section 31 ship.
Yeah, why do they have a name? I mean, why is it just a number?
I don't know. You would think it would be more, it should be a name. It should be more innocuous than a registry number that can be easily looked up, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think they'll come up with some kind of off-the-cuff name at some point, but yeah.
But just curious.
But the featurette also came out like a week ago where they're talking about Section 31 being a secret organization, worst kept secret ever.
Yeah, everyone knows it.
I laughed out loud when they said it's a top secret organization. Well, it was always supposed to be, but in Discovery it has not been.
Yeah, Section 31 bugs me quite a bit because I love the way they were introduced in Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
You never heard of them all through TNG, whatever. That's fine. It's perfect. And then, of course, they have to retcon it into Enterprise with Malcolm. And it's like, okay, that was, you know, a little bit unnecessary, but it was done well. Yeah. And now it's like, hey, here's Section 31.
In your face.
We have some theories about it's going to have to – it was once secret. It's kind of come out into the open now. But because of something that happens with Giorgio or whatever, it's going to have to be officially killed by the Federation, although not officially, if you know what I mean. And it kind of goes back underground. Well, that's what I feel is playing up to, you know.
That's what it seems like to me too. That they're gonna like, since what happened this episode is gonna end up ruining Leland later on, which has been Michelle Yeoh's entire thing as Section 31. She wants to ruin Leland. I think him getting ruined is going to cause Section 31 to need to be publicly disavowed, and then the Section 31 series can be like them being true covert ops instead of like in-your-face covert ops.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's what I think too.
Just to back up real quickly, we had a great sequence of the cage open up for this, which is really cool.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because in Canada here, we watch it on the Space Channel, which is network television.
Yeah.
And they play Star Trek all week. So Mondays is TOS from like 3 till 8.
Wow.
TNG is Tuesday, and then so on and so forth. Voyager, then DS9, then Enterprise. And so I thought they had made a mistake. And I thought it was like a one of the promos that we see all the time for Star Trek on Space. Took me like about 30 seconds to go, oh, wait a minute. No, they're actually doing this. That's awesome.
It was really nice little montage. And I think it helps anybody... because I've had a couple people ask me, because not everyone, they might be Star Trek fans, but they haven't seen The Cage, you know. So yeah. That was cool. So that gave a little primer, I suppose. And then, like I said, we start off on the Section 31 ship. We have Leland and Giorgio, and they're talking to Starfleet Command. And basically, they're kind of getting, Leland's getting spanked a bit because...
She's wearing her dominatrix outfit.
Yeah, well, that's as usual. Yeah, they're just a big dominatrix. S&M ship flying through space.
It's what you don't see whenever the camera's on. It's like, yeah, so yeah. What are all the other decks of the ship for?
Yeah, we don't talk about that, Dave.
Safe words.
So they're pretty pissed, basically, that Burnham and Spock took off. And they basically say Burnham committed another act of mutiny. So there you go. She's in trouble again.
Oh,
and
joy.
Obviously just bringing up again that Spock's knowledge of the Red Angel and the Red Bursts are very important to them. And they can't... they can't track down Burnham because of she's hiding her warp trail. And so they're going to start checking out other spots where they could have basically hit. So that's where we get left there. And then we kind of get like, I guess it's a bit of a dress down between Giorgio and Leland, that she's like, obviously she's jockeying to be the person in charge. She's playing by Mirror Universe rules, I suppose.
Yeah, and my question is, what's up with the admirals? I mean, the one admiral's like, no, we want to hear from Captain Georgiou. Like, are the admirals all aware that she is the emperor, or only a few of them know?
I feel like only Cornwell knows.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Cornwall, Leland, and then a couple people on Discovery. So they all think that she was Captain Georgiou that was found and, you know, is now retired Captain Georgiou. So I'm wondering how far that goes as to who knows what.
Right.
And does everyone, like, just in charge of Section 31? Like, it seems like they've got no defined leader. They just answer to all the admirals.
Yeah.
Like if they're changing the rules for Section 31, let us sit on what the new rules are, for the love of God. Please tell us what the rules are.
You think they'd have like a Hoover or something like that running the whole thing. So, there seems to be a doubt in Leland's command abilities. And then they go into that with the Georgiou says that she wants to take Discovery and kind of put them on the sidelines. So don't involve them. This is obviously they have a vested interest in finding Spock and with Michael Burnham. So keep them kind of away from the whole situation. So they're going to order Discovery to look at that time portal thing that opened up last episode and find out about the octopus probe.
Woo! Octopus.
Yeah, look for debris to find out why it was downloading the shuttle's files. Yeah.
Right. So that's where we kind of leave them.
Now, before you move on, though, are you guys concerned at all about Kaminar and the Kelpians because of that big time tsunami that exploded before Discovery warped out?
Yeah, they all got old.
They decided to go back. No reference, not even a line is made to them. Everybody's fine on the planet, guys, by the way, even though that big thing. This happened.
The Kaminar thing doesn't make sense anyway, because just because they destroyed their genocide weapon doesn't mean that the Ba'ul can't just come in with hand phasers and shoot all the Kelpians in the face. I mean, they're not safe. I mean, they didn't answer any of that. Okay, yeah, the genocide weapon's gone, but you can commit genocide on a macro scale, little bit by little bit. You don't have to do it all at once. And the Ba'ul are advanced, and the Kelpians are basically cavemen.
They're
also lacking their fear now, and they're strong. They're stronger. So,
yeah. So they're going to Ewok it, right?
Yes.
Nice, love it. No, but I mean, you're right. I mean, it is very. You know, the Kelpians live this agrarian lifestyle.
It would be great if their process got rolled back, and they all have their fear again. That would be hilarious. Exactly.
Yeah, they go back and waste time. Yeah. That'd be fun. Well, there's something happened on their planet, I'm sure.
Or to where the Red Angel saved them, and then they just all got killed anyway because that rolled them back just before the Red Angel came.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, they all die.
That'd be fun.
Damn it. Yeah, so, and then Georgiou calls Pike and basically saying, you know, just let us know if you hear anything about Spock and Burnham, and that they want given the orders that you're supposed to basically just take care of this, studying this anomaly that happened. And so Pike's still, I guess, very, very skeptical of Section 31, which I think he should be.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then back on the shuttle, we see Burnham's flying to Talos IV, and it talks about how it was destroyed by a nuclear war, and the population got their psychic or abilities. And when they arrived there, it looks like a big black hole. And
that was such a fun shot.
It was. And she's like, we're going to die. And, you know, she had just like revitalized Spock, and Spock just starts flying straight into it. So, and there's a quick little fight between both of them and the taking the controls of the shuttle. And once they fly into it, the black hole disappears and you're at Talos IV. So
that was pretty fantastic. The way that illusion shattered. When they hit it, which was great. But does anybody else wonder why the death sentence hasn't been mentioned yet?
Yes. Why did they bring it up? Yeah. Well, they did finally mention that it was off limit.
Yeah, travel was restricted within the Talos Star Group, but no talk of the death sentence. And I think that just goes back to more modern kind of take on things, because in the 60s, the death sentence was more of a common thing, I guess. Yeah. I don't think they want to mention it less necessarily, because I thought it was totally stupid and over the top to have a death sentence in the Federation. But
right.
And it's for going to this one planet. I mean, like, basically going there is a death sentence anyway. Theoretically, I mean, you're probably going to be enslaved or just kept in a cage. So, like, what's just like, hey, if you go there, you're probably not coming back. That's a death sentence in itself. Just, I don't know. It seems, yeah, it does seem heavy-handed.
Yeah. It would make more sense to have a death sentence to go to the planet the Guardian of Forever is on, personally. That seems more dangerous.
Oh, yeah, because you can fuck with time.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. I agree, Stuart.
Yeah, it was a weird thing that they had, but like you said, I think that was a product of the 60s, and it, you know, let's face it, it's like one of those like this so forbidden, you have a death sentence, and it's kind of like, oh, what's going on that planet, kind of thing. So
yeah,
after they land on the planet, Stamets is with Culber, and he's trying to make him feel better, and as they're walking through the hallways. They see Tyler walk by, and this is the first time I suppose Culber has seen Tyler on the ship. And Culber definitely has an issue with it. And before he even walks into his quarters with Stamets, he kind of like goes and gives a kind of a stink eye glaring look at Tyler as he goes into the turbo lift.
He's wondering if he's got two dicks right now. He's eyeing him up hard.
We don't know. There was definitely was a moment there, and obviously foreshadowing. And then we jump back up on the bridge, and Pike is talking to Arium, talking about the looking into the ship's data core and the how that creature, octopus probe creature, was stealing their data and what it was looking for. And during that time, Saru's talking to Pike and says they were going to be looking at the Quilliam station, which is a Vulcan hospital. And this is kind of gives Tyler the idea that they are still looking for Burnham and Pike, Burnham and Spock, because even though they've been ordered to just study this, what happened there in the Kelpian's homeworld. So, anyways, back there we have the the octopus squid probe. They've only got when they're trying to take all the debris off, they've only found debris from the shuttle. So they haven't found anything from the probe, which is I would say pretty unusual. So. Still a mystery there.
Arium's hiding it.
Arium's hiding it from the sensors, or it got, because it had a different quantum signature from a different time, it got all sucked back into the time vortex when it closed, was my guess.
Or she's smuggling it in her rectum.
Well, if she has one. So then we jump back to Talos 4. And
she got junk in that trunk. Octopus rectum junk.
It nearly killed him. So anyways... Burnham lands the shuttle, and she goes out with her phaser looking around. I thought it was unusual. Didn't you think that she just walks out with a phaser? Seems very un-Starfleet-like. Not that you wouldn't have this phaser, but that you're just like, she looked like she was ready to shoot.
She's
heard the travel restricted there, so.
Expecting it to be dangerous, but it also looks a lot like the planet where she beamed down to with Tyler when they met other Vok.
It was. It's just a quarry near Toronto somewhere.
So she was worried there was going to be a phaser cannon up on the cliff there, and there's going to shoot at her again.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. During that time, we see that little plant that makes that sound when you touch it, or you stop touching it, it quiets down. So this is a throwback from the cage. So it's a nice little touch they threw that in there, I thought.
Yeah, that was really well done. And that even it mirrored the scene almost exactly, because she kind of had a smile on her face like Spock did. I thought that was really well done and well handled. And the sound effect for the planet was spot on. So
right. And then we get the entrance of Vina. Vina walks in onto the shuttle. And she knows who Spock is, and I was trying to remember if she interacted with Spock at any point. I think that she saw him, but I don't know if
she interacted with him. Because there was the whole group of people at the landing party, remember, at the very beginning? So they interact with them as a group. And then Spock was also there when Pike got let out.
And not only that, but you got to think that the Talosians have been in Pike's brain, and she's kind of been playing house with Pike all these years.
On the Enterprise.
So Pike would have told her, or the Tetalus projection of Pike would have told her about Spock, I'm sure.
Yeah.
She does know who Spock is and how close he is to Pike, so.
Sure, that makes sense. Yeah,
he shows up in the three-way sometimes.
Oh, jeez. Well, you know. So
once every 7 years.
So they go to the she's introduced herself to Michael, and she explains who she is, that she was on the survey ship, and that the Talosians put her back together. So we get her introduction, and she gives coordinates for Burnham to her and Spock to beam down to below the surface. And so that's where they're going to go. So once they beam down, Burnham just looks up, and Vina's right there with her. So she might not even been on the surface, probably wasn't, so, which is interesting. And then we get the Talosians itself, which they get our first introduction to them, and I thought they looked fantastic.
Yeah, you know what though, they looked more like a reimagining of the Bynars to me.
The Bynars.
Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, like,
they look almost identical.
You could update makeup without redesigning the alien. And after they showed the original, clips from the original show, the redesign was just so in your face. Like, if they didn't do that thing, I would have still complained. But now that they showed original Talosians and then the new ones, it's super jarring. And it's only been 3 years. That's not enough time to evolve a nasal ridge that goes all the way around your head.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not bad. I did watch your take on Stewart on Trek Yards, the Talosians, and I do feel like I agree with you that they seem more like generic aliens and not like Talosians. And I also...
They're Talosians that are 25% different, we can say.
Yeah, and I mean, I also I wish they would have cast all women like they did for them. That way they had the smaller face so that the makeup is even bigger. But even the woman that was standing behind him, her makeup was toned down, so her head was smaller. Like, it just, like, they didn't seem as brainy as they should have been, you know?
I kind of missed that they didn't turn around and didn't get the little ass in the back of their heads.
Well, they're not going to that nasal ridge is going to censor their ass because it's going to go all the way around the head and cover up that crack.
This is a crime, people.
This is a crime. Don't redesign things for redesigning them.
You
can update the makeup and make it look 10 times better with modern effects and still keep the inherent look.
Yeah, and their veins didn't even pulse. They kind of had like a shimmer go through them instead.
They rippled a little bit.
Yeah.
It was like a wave a little bit instead of like a pulse.
Yeah. I didn't hate it. I was more excited to see them.
I mean, I was excited to see them too, but then again, I also knew they were redesigned from the preview last week, so I was like, meh. But I mean, their outfits are really cool, and the medallion was awesome, but just the makeup. Like, why did you change the makeup? You didn't have to do that.
Well, from there, they start talking telepathically, and then she asks if they can speak, and she goes, I suppose we can do it the ancient way, if you really want to. And
they should have evolved, not a mouth, so they wouldn't be able to do it the ancient way.
Just talk out of the crack at the back of their head then.
Yeah, that's flagellants.
That would be awesome.
So Burnham basically, you know, says that we need you to scan him telepathically, and the Talosians say that Spock is not experiencing time linearly. He's seeing it more of the fluid. And so this is messing up his conventional logic, and it's destroying his mind, basically. And so she asked if the Talosians can help him, but they said they can do that, but they need a little something in return. And they need to see basically their worst memory between each other.
Which was just, hey guys, we want to tell the audience.
Exactly. It was such a Oh, it was so dumb. Like, their payment. Like, they could have so many things they could have asked her for.
I don't know. It's sort of like, yeah, I can. It's like a creepy guy saying, like, yeah, I can help you. He says, but you got to show me a little.
Show me the first time you cock-teased Spock.
Yeah. Well, not just that, but it's like, you know, like if some girl, you know, has a car broke down, it's like, I can help you, but, you know, show me a little leg or something like that. You know, it's like kind of a creepy thing to do. You know, it's like, why would you ask that? Why don't you just. Other good, but and Vina basically says, you know, it's like one of the things they need because they have no. It may be entertainment, but they have nothing else. So this is the only thing that can keep them going, I guess. So
they need new experiences. And I mean, sure, but I don't know. And I think it was even more disappointment what it was because it was super cliche.
Well, here was the part where I was kind of disappointed is when Vina shows Burnham what she really looks like. I know they're trying to go with what she looked like from the, you know, the cage, but I think they could have made her look a lot more fucked up.
Oh, the thing is, someone I saw online was complaining about that too. And I think, I mean, like maybe since they interact with more humans and they had like this maybe scanned the doctor's brain from the Enterprise, maybe they're able to fix her slightly better.
Maybe.
In the
interim. I mean,
because they know what humans look like now. Before, they didn't have a way to put her back together because they didn't know what to work. They're working with.
And
now,
they've scanned
Pike. They know the internals, all that, whatever.
And they could have scanned Pike's doctor, too, and he might have plastic surgery knowledge, and they could, like, oh, let's try that. And since they're not perfect at it, you know, maybe she's a little bit better than she was.
Yeah. She seemed very similar to how they filmed her. Back in the cage. That's my point.
Yeah, it was similar. It was definitely similar, but it wasn't as fucked up as it was for some reason.
Right. So then we get. She basically. Michael says, "Yes, you can go through my shitty memory with Spock, but first you got to help Spock first." So, and they agree. And so they start going into the night Burnham had disappeared, and when she's in the ran away from her home, and this is where she gets the Red Angel appears to him that night. So basically, like over his bed, or looked like it was right over him. So that was got to be pretty terrifying for a child.
Yeah, you'd think.
Like, what the fuck? And then next is where he went to a faraway planet, and from there the Red Angel shows up and he tries to mind meld with it, but he wasn't able to do it apparently. And then we see the suit, but the suit is got like almost like a motorcycle helmet kind of thing going on. So
plus you mentioned something about a quantum field that restricted it a bit because of the time travel aspect of the suit. So,
but he did detect it was a human. So this is furthering my Michael is the Red Angel idea.
Right. Right. So, but he did get showed him a vision where these missiles fly off to destroy all these planets. And then it kind of disappears. And we don't know what that's from. We just knows that he has this idea or like a picture from the Red Angel from doing the mind meld that destruction of all these civilizations could happen through an unknown entity.
Yeah, and it was Earth, Tellar, Vulcan, and Andoria.
Right, all the important planets.
Yes, the only ones that matter.
Yes, right.
Kronos could still be alive. I guess they're not considered sentient. I don't know.
No, I guess not. Then we go back to Stamets and his quarters. This kind of felt like a little flat for me because after you had that great scene and then you're like, oh, now we're going back to Stamets and Culver. And we just like Stamets is trying to, you know, give him dinner. Trying to do all this nice stuff. And he's just like, yeah, you never did this for me before. This is nothing of this feels normal. So again, I think we talked about this last episode, Dave, just that, you know, Culver, you know, he may be himself, but he's been changed radically and the experience is not him anymore. So whatever happened is in the mycelium world network, he's radically changed.
Yeah, he said his senses and his feelings don't connect with anything. So he can't recognize his favorite food. He doesn't have the same feeling about the relationship. So
Right. So interesting. And although, like I said, it kind of fell flat this for me because of the, you know, over the top thing that Michael sees, you know, with Spock. But I think this is probably this is an important scene for the two characters. I think we're obviously seeing for some reason these two are going to go their separate ways.
I mean, they should have just left him dead, honestly. I mean, like, all the times they cut back to Culber and Ash this season, this episode was just a distraction. It just was like, this is shoehorned in here to hit a check mark. It doesn't feel natural as part of the show. Maybe they'll make it part of the plot later on. Maybe Hugh's the Red Angel because he feels discombobulated or whatever. I mean, he's probably the next strongest candidate for being the Red Angel, but I don't know. It just it feels forced right now, and it feels like it's taking away from the story of Discovery to shoehorn this in. It feels like pandering. It doesn't feel like it's enhancing anything, personally.
Right.
I would agree with that. Yeah.
We'll talk about maybe not pandering, but like shoehorning. We have a ready room meeting with Pike and Tyler, and they're kind of like having a small discussion about Section 31 and, you know, just how they work in gray areas and how Pike is convinced that Spock is innocent. And I'm not sure what this really sets up other than that Pike and Tyler kind of are trying to be friends. But I don't know what it really does for the story other than just kind of showing that they're trying to work together.
You show me yours, I'll show you mine.
Yeah, kind of thing. And then right after that, Pike is talks to Saru. Saru says that somebody's been sending messages, subspace transmissions in large burst. And Saru doesn't know who's sending them, but he's going to be looking into it. So obviously, we're pretty sure that this must be R.E.M.
It's definitely R.E.M.
But, well, pretty sure. But
yeah, it's worth pointing out, too, that there are unauthorized, heavily encrypted transmissions. And there was only three of them. There is three dots when it comes to Arium's eyes. So I don't know if that's what this is in regards to. I think it's also making up for the fact that the probe didn't get all the information downloaded from the shuttle. Sure. So there's not that tie-in as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think that's right.
Right. And then we jump back to Talos IV, and Burnham had passed out after that experience. And so she wakes up. And they start going into the back memories of everything right there of how when she ran away from home and how she was chased by
the same creature on the frozen planet that Spock saved Kirk from in Star Trek 2009. Huh.
Yeah. Well, only the one on the ice planet was blatantly bright red. On an ice planet for some reason. And the one on Vulcan, which associate with red, was some kind of dull gray color.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Also,
true.
Also, they showed the moon at night, and Vulcan has no moon, unless it's Delta
except
Vega, which is
not
the moon.
Except when it does, which is every other time except for that episode. Yeah.
Interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Stuff like that, Dave, you know?
Yeah. I don't
just,
know.
You go like, what?
But what is Delta Vega if not a moon? If you can see Vulcan get sucked up from it,
what is Delta Vega? Seriously, Delta Vega. Don't get me started on 2009, please.
Okay. All right, I mean, we won't.
The alien that chases little Michael just looks just like the creature from 2009. So that's what I'm saying. Maybe it's a creature that happens both Vulcan and Delta Vega. Who knows?
Right. Well, Spock and Burnham. Spock is now, I guess, would you say he's back to his full faculties, or at least he seems all right. So, and he basically says
that. I think I'll go for a walk. I'm getting better. I'll go for a walk.
Right. And they have this great little interchange between the two. And Spock basically says that he thinks that the angel is a time traveler, which I think we've all pre-surmised to that. And
Spock.
And that he might be seeing possible futures, maybe not the actual future. So that's important as well.
And pointing out here too, the whole she was asking rhetorical questions. He's like, please ask me something that I haven't considered asking myself. Yeah, do you think that beard's working for you? That was the best thing in the whole episode.
I thought
say goodbye, Spock. Goodbye, Spock was kind of funny.
Okay, yeah, I agree. You are right. That is the best.
Although the goodbye spark wasn't a trailer from weeks and weeks ago, so we kind of
I know it's still it was still I thought it was fun. Anyways, so we definitely had a nice interaction between the two. Actually felt I got to say, even though I've been dubious about Michael being Spock's quote unquote sister, it felt like two siblings talking to each other. Like they fell into a pattern of talking.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it was really like if you know your, you know, your sibling, you know, you definitely talk differently with your sibling compared to other people. So it was interesting to me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And now, so they are going to show the Talosians are going to show Spock's memories of what happened in Starbase 5, where he had been accused of murdering. And they basically show the whole scene, exactly what happened. So he's working out equations. Why they can't give him a pad to write things, I don't know.
You don't get pads when you're in the Federation Funny Farm. You only get crayons. Yeah, exactly. And the floor. You get
crayons in the floor, right? It'd be funny if said, who's going to clean up this mess? But they didn't. And so
we'll get McCoy to do it.
Yeah. So they get the they basically reaffirm that everything Spock was saying has some validity to it, and this is when they want him to stay, but Spock wants to leave. He basically wants to check himself out, and so this is where Spock kind of moves into action. And we've seen the scene in the trailers as well, but Spock basically takes out the doctor and the guards. And Burnham's like, that's it? That's what happened? He's like, yeah, what'd you think was I didn't kill these people. I didn't murder them. So obviously, if these people were murdered, we're pretty much led to believe that Section 31 is the one who killed the people afterward.
Absolutely.
So next scene, we get back in Discovery, where Culber goes to the mess hall and basically starts shit with Tyler. And we have a cool beginning to a fight. You know, Culber knocking his tray was pretty fucking badass. And then they start fighting, bring Volk out.
Food fight!
And then he just kind of gives up. I was like, come on, that's a fight? I was kind of like, I was disappointed with Culber not like really getting into a full fight. Like, I know they were beating the crap out of each other for a minute, but they kind of gave up. But also, which we discuss later, Saru just kind of like, yeah, just let this play out. So...
I kind of agree with Saru there. I love the conversation he has with Pike later, but we'll talk about that when we get there.
Yeah, I thought it was a weird choice, but did you guys feel that the fight kind of was like nobody was left really bloody? It's just they just kind of walked away from each other. That wasn't like a. It was just like a start of a fight.
I like how it ended. How they were like, Culver's like, I'm not sure who I am anymore, and Vox like, or Tyler's like, I know how you feel, man.
Yeah.
They have so much in common now because they both have that kind of duality to them. Right. So it's like, well, are they going to become besties because of this? Like,
I know.
The parallels are uncanny there.
Yeah, but I just kind of felt like it felt like two boxers that have been fighting and they're just so tired they start leaning on each other.
Yeah.
I don't know.
The scene didn't do anything for me. It just seemed like a distraction from the important things that are happening all around it.
I felt that, but I also, like I said, I thought the scene started out really strong. It's like, oh, this is going to be good. This is what I've been waiting to see, you know, because, you know, I want to see Ash Tyler get his ass kicked. So anyways, whatever. So next scene we get Pike talking to Saru, and he talks about how he allowed the fight. This is another one. You know, basically Saru feels that maybe this was, you know, he had to, this had to work itself out one way or the other. And, you know, I felt that Pike was like, yeah, sort of like, yeah, I guess so. Whatever, man. I was like, what?
Well, you got to remember that he's got joint custody of the ship. He's co-captaining with Saru. So he's got to kind of respect his decisions a little bit, but like, that's kind of been forgotten that they're both kind of captains at this point. Yeah. Even though Pike is the captain in charge. But I love how Saru kind of fires back, and the Starfleet manual offers no regulatory guidelines on humans with Klingons grafted to their bones or doctors that come back from the dead.
Yeah, right.
It's like, snap.
I mean, he's not wrong, but I mean, like, it was kind of interesting, Pike, you know, talking about, hey, we do things a peacefully way, because it's basically just reciting Gene Roddenberry's vision for the future, where like, there's no fighting between the crew. It's all outside entities. Yeah. So it's kind of interesting that like they're going by the manual, and the manual is Gene Roddenberry's mandate.
Right.
Yeah, we're going to settle our difference. We're not going to settle our differences with violence, but the uniform code of conduct. Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, yeah, it's good way to go forward for sure. And then next we get Pike goes to his ready room, and then Pike sees Vina there. And so we had a nice scene between the two, how, you know, she's obviously they both missed each other, obviously. And she brings out, I think, as we stated before, that she's lived a lifetime with Pike, you know, through the Talosians. So so from there, then the Talosians project themselves with Michael and Spock. And they start going into what actually is happening. And they only have a small window to tell him what's happening, but basically knows that Spock is innocent and he never murdered anyone. And the reason their Talosians are talking to him so they can't, Section 31 can't follow that communication. And then basically saying that they have to follow the Red Angels' plan or try to work out what's happening, because there's a impending future that could destroy, you know, tons, you know, millions of people, and they have to figure it out one way or the other. So, and that they have to go to Talos 4, basically.
Come pick us up.
Pick up your friends.
You're their Uber.
You're their Uber driver. And then we jump over to Stamets and Culber again. They're back in the mess hall, and we got those little, what is it, probes that what's her name had picking up all the garbage from the fight.
Yeah, the kiddos, so anyway, she called them.
The kids, yeah. And they're kind of talking, and basically, you know, this is where Culber basically kind of like says, I think we should do our own thing. Kind of, you know, wants to split up, or at least be separate, or not try to go forward the way they have been going to. So
it's not you, Paul, it's me.
Yeah, it's the mycelium network that reconstructed me, and I don't know who I am anymore. And
I'm the top.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus. So from there, we go to Black Alert, and they're going to jump to Talos 4, and Stamets goes into the little container area, and he's going to they're going to do the jump. And strangely enough, they can't do it until he says there's something corrupted their the spore drive computers. So something's gone wrong.
And she mentions the Duotronic computers.
Duotronic. Yes. That's a callback to TOS. And
it's nice. The first time we've ever had a spore drive issue, because warp drive always went down in TOS. Something always happened. Now we finally have a spore drive issue. It's first time for everything.
Right. So so from there. We find out that obviously they know some things go. So they have the burst, the transmission burst, and then this goes down, and they automatically blame Tyler from Section 31. And Saru says, hey, even your commands or whatever, your access codes are all over this, these transmissions. So he gets sent off to be confined to his quarters. So obviously...
And Pike makes the point to say it might not have been you. It might have been Section 31 that pulled the information from your mind, or Manchurian candidated you so you didn't even know you did it.
Right. So
there's still possibilities there, but we definitely know that it's Arium.
Hey, we Vok'd you.
We Vok'd a Vok.
You've been too Vok'd.
Yes. Love it. All right. So so they're going to go to Starbase 11 at maximum warp, because I guess that's close to 2 light years away from Talos 4.
Bullshit. And then... 2 light years is pretty close. And yeah. Talos is supposed to be far out, according to the cage. So I call bullshit on that. Plus 2 light years and it's restricted travel within the Talos system seems a little bit sketchy to me.
Yeah, I would say so.
Years would probably be within the system.
Yeah.
That's
exactly.
That's their military checkpoint for not letting people go near it.
Right. Well, and
excuse me, are you drinking tonight?
Your kids drinking tonight? So so Pike says, then we'll go run silent after that and to show off Section 31 or anybody chasing them. Then we just get a quick scene of Arium, and she's got the three red eyes, or three flashing things in her eyes again. So we know that she's doing her bad devious things.
Temporal Cold War.
So then we go back to Talos on the shuttle, and you know, they're kind of saying their goodbyes, and but they have to do their last little payment, and this is where we get to see what actually happened between Spock and Burnham. And when Burnham was running away, she was afraid that the logic extremists were going to come and hunt down and destroy the family, kill them, whatever, you know, to them. And so she went to protect everyone. And so when Spock runs out to stop them, or stop Michael from running away, she basically calls him a freak, a half-breed, and, you know, she says, you're cold and distant like the moon somewhere. So,
like Delta Vega.
Yeah, like Delta Vega. I didn't expect this. I mean, because me and Dave have been discussing that maybe there was some kind of sexual thing between them.
My first Ponfar. I don't know. Like
I never once considered that. I heard that mentioned a few times, and I'm like, sorry, guys, but that's just stupid. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
This is exactly how I thought, exactly how it would play out. And sure enough, I wasn't disappointed.
But this was so cliche. This is like this thing that happens all the time where, like, someone just calls someone names. It's so disappointingly cliche. That's why I really wanted the Spock cock tease thing to happen, because that way it's like it's kind of way out there. And it's like, what the fuck? And it's like, you know, it kind of catches you off guard, some people. And this was just too cliche and too, like, dumb.
Well, the thing that really bothers me is that she thinks that this would cause a lifelong rift between the two of them.
That's
you got to realize.
Exactly. You got to realize children.
Spock's an intelligent being. He's going to realize, like either then or later in life, that, oh, she did that for my own good. She didn't really mean that, you know?
Yeah, right.
And it doesn't make sense that this rift happened like the month after she moved in. You know what I mean? Like, that's not enough time to create a bond. Like, that's the thing. It seemed like it should have been like when they were both teenagers or something, not when.
Yeah, I agree.
This doesn't make any sense for that thing to happen. That's why we were thinking, you know, they've got time to, you know, have that brother-sister bond. Then Ponfar happens and things get awkward and weird. And that's why that's why bad things happen. But this is the most cliche, boring way of doing it. And it's just overdone. And I was really disappointed Star Trek did this overdone trope of, like, I'm going to call you names, protect you.
I liked the half-breed thing because that was a callback with Kirk to snap Spock out of his, thing at the time. So anyways.
It scarred him back from childhood when his sister did that to him. Oh, my God.
And then there was this great exchange between Burnham and Spock afterward. I did think the scenes, the look back, the memory look back was really well filmed, you know, because you said the child actors and then you had the adults and they're kind of going back and forth. I thought that was very interesting how they did that. And then the interaction between Burnham and Spock, they start talking about what happened. And it was a great, the dialogue was great, I thought. You know, he calls Burnham was a catalyst, and that he had to, he didn't know who he was, because he obviously had a human side, he had a Vulcan side, and, you know, logic is failing him, all these things are failing him, and what was he supposed to, you know, make himself? What do you say? I had to build myself out of something, and yet I had to build myself one way or the other. So, I thought it was a great scene. I don't know if you guys felt the same way, but
it was well shot and it was well done, except for it being an overused trope. I agree that the back and forth was really cool. Them switching between the child actors and the adult actors, that was great. It was well shot.
What about the after discussion?
Oh, the after discussion was also great.
I really like that. The fact that Spock says, "Don't attempt to psychoanalyze me, Michael. Many more qualified people have tried and failed." And then he goes on to say, "It was foolish to idolize you, and I regret it deeply." That's just a stab in her heart, you know. And it's
right.
Like, good job, Spock. I like that.
Yeah. Spock's kind of giving his brotherly jabs.
Scorn. Yeah, but it doesn't feel like they had time enough to bond for this strong enough bond when the actors are the exact same actors from when they first moved in together.
I don't know. I mean, do we know it was literally a month after? Did they say that?
We have no time frame, but the actors are the same actors, so it couldn't have been long. If they didn't age up the actors at all,
it could have. I mean, Dave, it could have been a year. It could have been 2 years. They aren't going to get new actors. They're just doing that to symbolically show that they were still young at the time.
Yeah, but
she had a different haircut. She had the Spock. She had the Vulcan haircuts that Michael did at that point when she ran away and everything. So,
I mean, there's no time reference, which is it's hard to tell.
Yeah.
All right. You just didn't like that they did that.
I agree it was a little longer, maybe a year or so, but I don't think it was a month.
I mean, I'm sure it probably wasn't a month, but with the very little change in the actors, or they didn't try to make them look older or different very much other than the haircut, it's just like, it's
Dave, she had a different haircut. She changed her hairstyle.
Yeah, you can get.
Well, she changes her hairstyle every 10 seconds in this show. So.
Yeah, she does. She has amazing hairstylists for sure. Well, from there, we have Discovery is Vina tells them Discovery is coming, so they have to get ready to go. Discovery shows up at Talos IV, and Leland and the Section 31 ship are right there with them, and they're hailing them, and basically they're like, you know, what are you doing? You know, and they scan the planet Talos IV for Spock and Burnham. They get them onto a lock to beam them up, but Section 31 ship has them as well. And Leland's like, we're just going to tear them apart. If that's what you want, we can do that. And this is where Pike has this moment where he's talking to Vina and I kind of was like, she just says like to let them go. So it's kind of the message maybe that's saying that don't worry, you're all right. You can let them go for now. And for some reason, Pike trusts that.
Don't worry, be happy.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, she says, just trust me. And I think he realized that because it's the Talosians, there's going to be some chinky stuff going on. So just to let it go.
Yeah. Some form of fuckery. Yes.
Yes, exactly. And so he says, yeah, okay, disengage. Let him go. And this is when Leland says, you know, says, cool, thanks. And, you know, we'll see you. Basically, see you later.
That's the way you go.
And then Saru.
Be sure to turn yourself in to Starbase 11, by the way, guys. Then he leaves.
For disciplinary action, right.
You're going to get spanked.
And then Saru detects a shuttle coming from the surface, and they open the shuttle bay. They don't talk to whoever they are. And when they come aboard, it's obviously going to be Spock and Michael. Back on the Section 31 ship, Leland's there, and she's, you know, he's going to talk to, you know, find out what's going on with why Michael and Spock were on the planet. And this is where we have the say goodbye Spock, and they disappear. So great fun scene there too, you know, seeing Section 31 get their get foiled,
get
so.
The knickers in a bunch.
And it was cool seeing Giorgio, because you knew she was just watching Leland fall for this.
Right.
She had that smug look on her face, and then she ends up find out that she apparently murdered the Talosians in her universe.
Or so she thinks.
Yeah, I think they probably illusioned her, and yeah, we're dead. Bye.
Yeah, they play possum. They're like, yeah. Is it gone? All right. So on Discovery, Pike's there with Burnham. Spock and Burnham come off the shuttle, and they kind of like a reuniting thing. And basically Spock just says, hey, we got to basically save the universe. And we have the little, Spock smiling. Is that a smile I see?
So, yes, I believe it is.
Yeah. And that's where we end. What do you guys think? Stuart, what did you think of this episode?
Well, it's almost where we end, because then it's like, oh, Discovery's going to be the most wanted ship, blah, blah, blah. You guys don't have to follow what's the course heading, sir? So now it's like they're on the run.
Yeah, this is Star Trek 3, right?
Ship on the run.
Hold it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I thought this was a fantastic episode. Probably one of the best episodes of Discovery, hands down.
Yeah, I agree.
So far. And if they keep this kind of momentum up and this kind of the way they honored canon in this, they're going to hit it out of the park, I think. So overall, it was a fantastic episode. It was great seeing all the old callbacks to TELOS 4. The previously on was beautifully done. That really did a lot for mending fences with people that are just satisfied with the show. And I think they have nowhere to go but down really now. They just need to maintain this level and they'll be good.
Right. Dave, what about you?
Yeah, overall, this is a pretty good episode. Just the minor nitpicks like the makeup and the Culber being like a waste of time. I mean, if Michael's not the Red Angel, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Culber at this point because he's out of sorts or whatever. So if he becomes the Red Angel, that could sort of kind of make sense. But I'm still really hoping for a temporal Cold War type thing since the time frame for the squid probe thing getting modified sort of fits in with the temporal Cold War timeline. So I'm hoping that'll still be the way it plays out. It's definitely a good episode. Fun seeing the Talosians again, even though they were changed. The stuff that they did with our modern budgets and that black hole thing was so great. Getting to see the Talosians just like trick people. That's one way to do it.
Yeah.
Make your planet look like a black hole. That's so awesome. Pretty solid all the way around. How about you, Aaron?
I love this. I think as we've said before, this has just been so much fun. I love that they're, you know, the Talos 4. At first I was a little bit like, they're going to go rehash this. But I think they did great. The Pike and Vina reuniting was a beautiful moment. The Talosians played the part that you kind of hoped they would, as kind of like untangle the mess that Spock was in. And I loved the back and forth between Michael and Spock. I think those two, I think it really shows if they really worked out their roles together, you know, as talking as, like I said, like two siblings that have known each other for a bit, you know, and they know how they fall into these, like, communication or conversational ruts or something. I don't know how to put it, but I've seen this happen before between siblings. Besides that, I mean, yeah, I agree. The Culber thing, I think there's more to this going to happen with the Culber thing. I think they're leading up to something. But I don't know. I thought the Culber Tyler fight in the mess hall was a little bit like, could have been a little more savage, I guess. You know, this guy did kill you. So
I'm sure, but just the fact that it came up at all, it just seems forced because they brought him back to life and then they're not even going to keep the gay couple together. I guess it might be leading somewhere, but so far it doesn't feel like it is. It just feels shoehorned in for a checkbox at this point in time. I'm just really concerned. My biggest concern is that now that the threat has been introduced at episode 8, we've got 7 episodes left to, so there's a, we've got the threat uncovered, Discovery's now on the run, and then they have to figure out like what to do with the information that they have, and then they have to resolve it. There's way too much stuff to happen in only 7 episodes when it took them 8.
We've done a lot in just 8 episodes. I mean, a lot has happened. I admit, like we were saying, some of these episodes have been episodic. You know, we went to the Kelpian homeworld. We went to the post-apocalyptic world. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen that giant sphere entity that had all the information from all those millennium. You know, I don't know. It seemed like we've jumped around quite a bit, but we've got a lot of story within that time period. So
we have, but it's been lots of stopping and going, or having an episode of setup for an episode of payoff, an episode of setup for another episode of payoff. Because it's been very touch and go this season. And remember what happened last season, where they like, we got to tie up the Klingon War in just 2 episodes, and it was super rushed and super unfulfilling.
Well,
I'm not looking forward to something super rushed like that because, you know, I just see that happening again because we've taken so long to uncover there was an issue. Now we know there's a bad thing happening and now we have to discover, we got to resolve. We have to resolve Discovery on the run. We have to resolve what to do with the problem. And then once we've figured out what to do with the problem, then we have to actually solve the problem. and then get Discovery cleared of all mutiny charges and all that fun stuff. I mean, it's just a lot. It took them half the season to get the ball rolling, and now there's not a lot of time to stop it.
I disagree. I think they got more than enough time to wrap this up nice and neat, because this has been planned since the beginning of the season to be this whole story, this whole season's arc. So I have and really there's only been one course correction, and not as major as the Brian Fuller incident from season one. So I think that this has a much better chance of wrapping up nice and neat by the end of the season, personally.
I hope so, but just after season one, I'm just scared they can't do it. I mean, I hope they prove me wrong. I'm just really worried about how season one felt so rushed by the end. I'm just worried they're going to feel rushed again.
I don't know. I my feeling is more of I think they'll be able to do it. I think the idea, though, like we were saying, just that Discovery on the Run, this is going to be a plot, you know, like to make it a little more tense, a little more scary, or not scary, but like, you know, give them less resources. So, I mean, this is going to be interesting to see how they treat Discovery constantly on the run. And then you have Arium, who's sabotaging the ship as well. So that's going to come into play as well.
Well, so the next episode is going to be the Arium thing, which I assume they'll probably resolve next episode. So that's six episodes to resolve the other plot issues.
Well, I'm sure they'll be moving along the plot as well. I like this. I like this episode. And I like most of everything that's gone forward so far. I really do. I got a question for both of you. If you were put in Pike's position on Talos IV and you could spend your life with Vina and live any life you would you accept to stay in that lifestyle or not? I've grappled with this question myself for a very long time. I'm just wondering if you guys ever thought about this.
Oh, it's like having a holodeck.
Permanent holodeck. And you could do anything.
I know. I would probably stay, personally.
I don't know. I think I might too, but then I don't know.
I guess it depends on like what kind of attachments I have at the time. Like right now, I don't know if I could, but if like I was in like if this was like a year and a half ago, probably. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, Dave, you were like, "Get me the hell out of here!"
Gotta remember, you're Pike though. You're sick of your command. You're tired of being responsible for all those lives. You're a Starfleet captain. You have responsibilities. You just want to kind of get away from it all. That's how the whole episode of The Cage starts, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I would take them up on the deal. I really do.
Well, I think I would. I think Talos IV should be the retirement home of the Federation. Just send all the old the old broken people there. You know, send all the people from the Federation Funny Farm there. The Talosians can control them and have their fun. And you're not hurting anybody. You're helping the Talosians by making them less lonely. And you're letting these people live full lives many a times over before they die. And if they're like a vegetable.
What they don't tell you is, because we never hear of it in TNG, is that actually Talos IV becomes Ryza. And the Talosians just make everybody's fantasies come true.
Interesting. That's awesome. Interesting. All of Vina's children are programmed to be are just trained to be super good at sex. Oh, yep. That's great. That's I like this is my headcanon now.
The weather control system that they talk about in Deep Space Nine on Ryza, it's not a weather control system. It's just controlled by the Talosians.
Oh man, that's so great. Except for Worf breaks the weather control system.
Well, they made him think he broke it.
This is my headcanon now. Thanks, Stuart. This is great.
Well, why not? Why not? You know, remember the episode, original series Shore Leave? Yeah. I mean, why not? Talosians, they kind of get off on everyone's like minds. Why not make that a place where you can just go off and just, you know, fulfill your wildest ideas and relive old memories and, you know, I don't know. I mean, they go to that planet and, you know, everyone's dying. And, you know, this way you'd be safe. You could be in like your little room and the Talosians would just get off on your memories.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it's win-win.
It's perfect. I mean, or like I said, the retirement home. Send all the sick and infirmed in Starfleet to Talos. Let them live up the best life they possibly could, like Pike got to. Pike got to live his retirement dreams in Talos. Oh, why doesn't every Federation citizen get that right? And you know, gives the Talosians things to do. They're bored with their big brains.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Great idea.
It seems like a it seems like you could definitely profit. Talosians could profit.
Everyone could. The thing is, the people who aren't totally infirmed, you could make them think they're having all this fun while their bodies are building all your condos and stuff for all the people when this place turns into Ryza, you know? Their bodies can be doing all this hard work, but in their mind, they're, like, getting laid all the time. It's great. I mean, this is a win-win situation. You've got, like, a workforce. You can keep entertained all the whole time. It's great.
I can think of probably, like, more than a dozen memories I would love to relive, you know? And I can think of, you know, fantasies of, like, things that you wanted to happen you could live. You know, it's like, why wouldn't you – I can understand maybe not want to stay forever. But I do – it does make sense if you could make that as a destination. And, like, the Talosians could stop living in a basement. they could rebuild their infrastructure and, you know –
with all the people, I mean, hell, people might even trade service for the payment anyway. Like, I mean, like if you could spend a lifetime on Talos in like a day, or like that Rick and Morty game where you live a whole life in like 5 minutes or whatever it is. It's just like,
right, yeah, yeah.
I mean, like that kind of thing would be priceless. Almost, you could trade that for rebuilding the planet.
And the idea too is like, this is the Federation. Like, why aren't we embracing Talosians? Why are they just purely scared of them? I mean, I understand the being hesitant, but if they can say, like, why don't we all work together? I mean, Talosians going to take over all the Federation. I mean, I suppose they could if they were not good, you know, if they were kind of dubious, diabolical. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, it could be.
I think the problem is, and the reason that there is the death penalty or the restrictions is because you're not quite sure anything that you do while you're there. You know what I mean? Like, they could make you do anything that they wanted and get aboard your ship, and you have no idea that reality is being twisted. So,
yeah, no, I mean, there's definitely a danger there, but I just seems weird that you couldn't work something out with them. I don't know. Do we know how many Talosians are still surviving? I don't think that was ever
three. I don't know.
We only see three, but I wonder if there was more. So,
I mean, it could be. Who knows? I mean, hopefully there's more.
Yeah.
I mean, they seem to have fun being voyeuristic. I mean, all you got to do is offer them some stuff like that, and they should be good to go.
Yeah.
Bring in the people.
I would think so.
Open up the
trade.
Bring
the people.
Tear down this wall.
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely have some fun. You could definitely have some fun, but whatever. Maybe too much fun. Yeah, that's all I got.
Very good. Very good. How about you, Stuart?
I got nothing else.
Awesome. Well, go ahead and tell everyone where they can find you online if they don't know.
Ooh, if you don't know, shame on you. Go to YouTube, look up Trek Yards, all one word, and subscribe. We do weekly videos. Every Saturday is our main ship about, you know, our show about ships or tech or whatever. But we also do live reviews every Friday on the new Discovery while Discovery's on the air. We also do Orville reviews. We usually do a live Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday nights or evenings. So check us out there or hit us up on Facebook. We've got a great community there. It's a good way to find out about our videos and just kind of learn about ships and tech because that's kind of our thing. We also have Fleet Yards, which focuses on ships from other sci-fi franchises, not just Star Trek, on Facebook as well. And we also, of course, have Twitter and Instagram and Discord and all that as well. All the links to those relative things are in the description of all of our videos. So just watch a video and hit subscribe.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Definitely do that.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got great content, and I've learned a lot from watching their videos, and they're very informative.
Absolutely.
Well, with Synthaholics, our music is provided by Warp 11, except for our intro. That's by Dave Wilkes. Warp 11 can be found online at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter, and I'm sure they're on Facebook as well. For Synthaholics, you can find us online at Synthaholics.com. You can shoot us an email at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. And we do have some emails. We're probably going to get to those once Discovery is over. You can tweet at us at the show. It's at Synthaholic Duo. Personally, I'm David_J_Duncan. Aaron's at Blackbird2004 and Holly's at Lunar Thistle. And the Facebook group is facebook.com/group/Synthaholics. Join the conversation there. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And please go to Apple iTunes, rate, review our podcast there. 5 stars would be nice, and say something nice about us so more people can see us. Then go to our Patreon.com/Synthaholics. That's a great way to support the show. You know, throw a buck or more to us that helps keep this the content coming and the podcast constantly being recorded. And then lastly, if you can't do those two, we definitely encourage you to word of mouth is a wonderful way. If you can share the episode, if you can tell people, coworkers, your friends, your boyfriends, your girlfriend about Synthaholics, let them know what we do and why we do it.
Absolutely.
Why do we do it?
I think we do it because it's fun and we like to laugh and we enjoy Star Trek and each other's company. So I think those are some of the big reasons we do it.
Those are.
And to meet great people like Stuart and have them come talk with us and join in the fun. Because the Star Trek community is great for the most
part.
That
is a plus. Yeah, yeah. Getting to know guys like Stuart and other people in the Star Trek universe is wonderful.
Absolutely. So that's definitely a big reason we do it. So again, thank you, Stuart, for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, sir.
Say goodbye, Stuart.
Goodbye, Stuart.
Goodbye, Stuart. Well, live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink and we'll cry till we laugh and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
We did it. Discovery.
All right.
I thought you were going to end with Say Goodbye, Spock. But no.
Say Goodbye, Spock.
Say Goodbye, Spock.
Goodbye, Spock. Yeah, that was pretty cool. Very nice.
Say Goodbye, Stuart. Well, I can just like rejigger this.
Bye, Stuart. Goodbye, Stuart.
Switch that around the edit. That'd be great.
Nice.